Call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us. It's hour number two, rolling along on your Friday, getting you set for the weekend. All right, coming up in this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And then we're going to dive into the coaches of the NFL. There are 10 new ones this year. Who's got the biggest hurdle to climb taking over franchise? Maybe it would be Doug Peterson in Jacksonville, or Brian Daboll in New York, or maybe Nathaniel Hackett in Denver. We'll talk about the 10 that are going to be making with new teams. And, of course, they've got, you know, a couple have been coaches before. So we'll talk about that coming up as well. But we've also got to get into the NBA and the Kevin Durant story that we touched on in hour number one. Just a little bit, like, there's a bigger picture with the Kevin Durant trade here. Minnesota was asked for the Brooklyn Nets asked for Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, and 4 first-round draft picks. And that Minnesota immediately said, yeah, no, thank you, click. And that it sort of leads to this question. If you're Kevin Durant and you want to be traded, you're not a free agent. You can't just go to whatever team you want to go to and then work it out financially. You're going to be traded. You've got the team that is trading you, Brooklyn, has to get value for you, equal value for you. And what does that mean to the team you're landing on? Now, don't get me wrong. If you're trading superstar for superstar, maybe Durant is a better player than what they're giving up. But it's going to be a big haul. Brooklyn is going to want a lot of good assets, good talent. So Kevin Durant is going to end up on a team in which you would say, oh, that team is a missing piece away from winning a championship. Oh, but the other pieces that made that possible are now gone. So he not only brings in Kevin Durant, he's got to be replacing this guy or this guy because they went over to Brooklyn in the trade. He's also going to be going to a team that might lose assets down the road. So it may not be this year, for example, that on his new team, he wins a championship, but they may lose first round picks, which obviously would be later in the draft and not lottery picks, but still important pieces to grow the basketball team to get younger while he is getting older. That's the dilemma that he's in. Every single team that Brooklyn calls about a possible trade for Kevin Durant, Brooklyn's going to want so much that it may not be an attractive place for Durant to go to. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. It's better to be a free agent where the team can work out its own salary issues, whether they want to go above the luxury threshold, whatever it is, or just get rid of some expiring contracts. But in a trade, you've got to get equal value, and that equal value may diminish what you're going to.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Good, the bad, and the dumb, the Friday edition. This is where we get you into the weekend. Of course we do. And we do so with the good of the day. Let's get started.
The good of the day is actually, I kind of enjoyed this. It's an impressive flex.
Okay.
By one Tiger Woods.
All right.
So he was asked, what is he at the Scottish Open right now? Is that,
yep,
is that Scottish what's going
Open,
on?
Yep.
He was asked, what does he do with all of his trophies?
Oh, you know, he's got a million of them.
He's got a couple.
Yeah.
And the only flex, I mean, it's a nice flex, and I don't know how anybody, well, there's 4 other people, I guess, who could do this. He just simply describes, like, well, I got 4 shelves at home. Each shelf is, each major gets its own shelf.
So basically what he's saying is he doesn't, like, if when he wins, like, the Arnold
Traveler's
Palmer
Cup or
Bay Hill or whatever. Yeah. He just goes, yeah,
I got it. It's probably in a vault somewhere.
Yeah, some vault somewhere.
But in his man cave office, I'm not sure where he keeps it. There are 4 shelves.
It must be nice.
And each one, award gets its own shelf.
You know what?
Major.
That's such a good question, though, because a lot of people don't know this, but like you sometimes not only get a trophy for, you get a trophy for winning, of course, but some tournaments will give you a trophy, not a trophy, but like a keepsake. If you make an eagle on a certain hole or you get a hole in one or like even something in the round where you don't win the tournament, but you've done something, like Augusta will give crystal for every eagle that you make. Like you get a piece of crystal, like how many eagles has Tiger Woods made at Augusta National?
Right. And
like how many pieces of this crystal does he have? Like 100? Like how many of these does he have?
Well, probably not 100 Eagles. That seems like a lot.
But nevertheless, there's a bunch of it.
And you get these at these tournaments. They'll give you something if you do something special. And he's probably got a million of those, too. Like little things like, yeah, I made a hole-in-one at Jack's tournament, and I got this little plaque.
Right.
Like, that's in the box over here, you know. But, yeah, after a while, what are you going to do with all that stuff? Like, what do you do with it?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, I think about all the, like you said, not really no-name tournaments.
Right, but still.
But, you know, it's not the Open. It's not the U.S. Open. It's not Masters. It's not, you know, it's not one of these big ones that we always talk about. And so the big ones, he just says, oh, I got four shelves.
I am surprised a bit, not terribly surprised, but surprised a bit because he's such a golf historian that some of the best golfers in the that have ever played the game have considered the U.S. amateur to be a major, not a professional major, but a major deal because of Bobby Jones. And I'm surprised he didn't say, I have five because I won three U.S. amateur titles.
Yeah, well, maybe yeah. I guess not.
Jack Nicklaus always considered the U.S. amateur a major because he would say, "He'd say you have 18," and he goes, "Well, I have 20," and they go, "Well, those don't count." He goes, "I know they're not professional, but in my mind, they're majors." And being a golf historian that he is, but yeah, good for well, I would. That's the way I would do it. If your whole persona is the majors only matter, that's basically I would have it four shelves.
I mean,
too.
Maybe he has some of them displayed, but I mean, he's won like 80.
He's won like 83 events. So, yeah. I mean, exactly. What are you going to do with all of them? You can't keep them all.
Can't keep them all.
I mean, what are you going to do? Have a Tiger Woods museum someday? Probably. But what are you going to do? Build a wing into your house to put them all in?
Yeah. Here's all my trophies.
Yeah. And after a while, you're like even if they had a Tiger Woods museum, how many people are going to stop at the 1999 Travelers right. Championship to go, oh my God, look at that thing?
Besides no, that,
it's like,
you
where's
know,
your Augusta stuff?
And displaying them all. You imagine how dusty they get?
Yeah.
Trophies aren't easy to clean.
No.
You got to take one down each individually. Nah, I can't. I can't do that. That's too much time.
That's right. Boy, wait, what happens to, you know, people, that's one thing people keep, right? People keep them their whole lives. They're like you have a trophy, you get it for football or baseball. Or something. You end up never throw it away. You never go, I'm just throwing this in the trash.
I got a box full.
You got a box full. So what happens to them? Like, when we get old and we die, what do people do with them?
I don't know.
Where they go, oh, here's grandpa's bowling trophies. Do they give them away to trophy companies and go, here.
See, that's a great idea.
Turn these into new trophies.
I should find out
trophies.
Because like, you were mentioning keepsakes, and I'll keep it at golf. My grandfather, you know, he got a hole in one once.
Yeah.
And he did. He went all out for himself.
Yes.
He had the scorecard and all of his buddies sign it. He had the golf ball that, you know, he scored the hole in one in that was in a display case. You know, he made himself plaques. No one made him a plaque. He made himself a plaque for
good
this
for
hole,
him.
Hole in one.
Yeah.
But that brings up that point. Like, I guess, is that just sitting in a box now?
Yeah.
At my aunt's house who lived nearby, or is it in a storage? I have no idea where happened to all that stuff.
It happens for everybody. Everybody, this is the one thing people will keep. And yet when they pass, what do you do with them? Who wants them? Nobody wants them. So is there a company that goes, look, we love grandpa too, but you don't really want to keep his old bowling trophies or golf trophies, do you? Here at Tony D's Trophy Emporium, we'll take them and refurbish them and make them new trophies for new people. Maybe there's a business that does that. I don't know. But yeah. So when I pass, my kids will probably be like, what are we going to do with all these stupid trophies my dad had? Little plaques and things that he still keeps around. Yep. Don't ever get rid of them. That's what you should do with them.
I know.
Keep them forever.
Put it in your will. You must keep it. You got to display them. I want shelves.
Exactly. I'm going to put in my will like the 72 basketball team in the Olympics. That they can never take the silver medals. But my children are never allowed to get rid of any of my radio awards that I've won over the years. They must keep them forever, and they must pass them on to their kids. Any elimination of these awards, they're automatically cut off.
That's right.
My son will be like, oh.
Great.
Ugh, just keep this stupid thing in my house. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that the worst World Cup ever – and I'm going to make up a word here, just got a little worser.
Is that the one that's coming up in November?
The one's coming up in November. All so right. Quick recap, just to bring you up to speed, if you didn't know about World Cup Qatar 2022.
Yeah.
They bribed FIFA officials to get the World Cup.
Sure they did.
They many.
Because there's no way they got it on their own merit.
No. It was proven that they bribed. Remember the FIFA raid?
You know? Oh, that's right. That's right. They did prove it. And they still went, well, too late. They're already building stadiums.
Yeah. Speaking of that, human rights violations.
All the time.
Galore. Yeah. You know, people were just dying left and right building these so-called stadiums. And not only were they building stadiums, they were building these air-conditioned stadiums that that Qatar had promised that the technology didn't exist. So that's why we had to move the World Cup from its traditional spot in the summertime when all the major leagues are off to the fall. So that way there you have a little bit you have a better chance of cooler temperatures. We talked about this not too long ago. They're running out of hotels. Right?
Yeah, that was surprising.
They're running out of hotels.
I remember we talked about this. Why in the world would you not have – you'd build a hotel for the World Cup.
Yep.
And then tear it down and make it something else.
No. We don't have enough time to build hotels, so we're going to set you up in tents. And I think we said the price was like $250 a night.
Yeah, exactly.
That didn't include electricity. So that means that you'll be staying in these tents without air conditioning in the desert. I don't know. Maybe it's a little cooler in November.
This is so stupid.
I think it was last week, it came out that no sex will be allowed unless you're married.
Oh.
So, you know, if you're looking for a good time and you're not married and you're, you know, that ripe old age of your 20s, sex is not allowed in the country. Yesterday.
Including the players. Like, they can't bring girlfriends and wives with them?
Well, no, wives are okay. If you're married,
you're married, you can have sex. Like, if you've got a girlfriend?
Nope. Put a ring on it.
All right.
But yesterday it came out, and this might be the worst one of all, because I don't know what, it's going to be complete anarchy. There will be no serving of beer during the games.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. This was a dumb idea. This is everybody who was involved in this should be arrested and put in prison.
Now, beer can be served during special events.
Ugh.
You know, I guess parties, but no beer will be served in the stadium. And I guess, like, you know, surrounding bar areas.
I'm serious. Even if I was the biggest soccer fan in the world and had good disposable income, knowing what's going on with Brittany Griner, I don't think I'd go near
Qatar. Oh, not at all.
I would be like, I don't even know what I'm allowed to do. Am I allowed to even cheer? Am I allowed to even wear a certain color? Like what are we doing over here? Like, it's got to be. I wouldn't go anywhere near it.
Oh, I know. The first thing I thought of was when they said no beer. I was like, what's an English fan going to do?
Yeah, right. I know. Isn't that part of the
German
joy
fan.
Of doing this?
Yeah.
Like, stop it. Oh, you know, I have to tell you, in all seriousness, that Real Sports episode of the building of those stadiums was one of the most eye-opening, jaw-dropping segments I've ever seen in sports journalism. I mean, they did a – let me tell you something, man. Journalism is expensive. Good journalism is very expensive. And it's one of the reasons why when you all complain about the media and you say, the media doesn't look into this, the media doesn't look into that – I'll stick up for the media in this regard. It's very expensive, and everybody wants their stuff for free, right? So everybody wants the stuff for free. So you go – like I this happens to me. I'm as guilty of this as ever. I will see a story, and I will go, oh, my God, that looks really interesting. Like an in-depth article on some athlete or an in-depth article on something about controversial in sports that I might go, hey, maybe I'll do it. Look into that. I'll click on it. I'll get to read the first two paragraphs, and I'll go like, and if you'd like the rest of this article – you subscribe for $1 a month.
Right.
And I go, no, thank you. Nope. Click. I'll find it. I'll find the information somewhere else. So nobody wants to pay for it. Real Sports, when they went there to talk about the building of these stadiums that were basically using Pakistani labor. They were shipping people from Pakistan that had no money to build these stadiums, and they were dying left and right. And in return, families were getting pennies for the lives of these workers. They went, filmed it there, filmed everything. They filmed where the workers were living. They filmed the stadiums. They filmed them building the stadiums. They filmed the interviews with the director of sports and told them that they had went out to where the workers were and said it was squalor conditions, like 15 people to a bathroom in a bucket. They also went to Pakistan and were filming the families, grieving families who were living in squalor and couldn't get any money for the death of the one person that was bringing them income. It was horrific. Horrific. And I applaud them for putting the money and the resources out there to tell that story. I don't know if it did any good, but still a good story. Anyway, I know I went a little long there, but yeah, very eye-opening.
Yeah. And it's just going to be, I mean, I can't wait for the next thing to pop. Because you know it's not done. Something else is going to come up.
It's too bad. This is the most important sporting event on the globe.
Yeah.
Without question.
And well, we can all look forward to 2026 when, you know, obviously we'll sell alcohol and everyone will be drunk.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Cutter.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, I reserve the right to take it back. Just all right. A disclaimer.
Sure.
But the NFL is pushing for the 2028 Olympic Games in L.A., to include flag football.
I saw this yesterday.
For both men and women.
I saw this yesterday, and I thought it was an onion story.
So did I.
I thought it was a joke.
And the only thing I could think of was like, okay, is this a way to guarantee a gold medal? I'm sorry. I'm just assuming. Maybe Canada has a chance because of the CFL, but.
Oh, please. I love you, Ron. You always find a silver lining in something. Like we would win the gold, silver, and bronze if we had three teams in flag football.
Yeah,
and other countries are like, "What do we?" Other countries are like, "What do? You pass this, right? No, you don't have to pass it. Sometimes you can run it.
Wait,
and then
what?
How many people? You're right. Canada might be competitive because of the CFL." Yeah, okay.
Well, you know, when the clock strikes, when the clock starts up, it'll be tied.
That's yeah, right? Yeah, but yeah, good point.
Would we professional athletes? I mean, we could use retired professional athletes.
Sure, could we?
Make up a team of like Jerry Rice, Barry Sanders. I mean, guys
way past,
guys who haven't worked out in years.
So, here's the thought.
Win a gold medal.
Here's the thought. You're right. Here's the thought. What if you're Roger Goodell? What's the upside to this? Right. Well, you get other countries going. Okay, the United States might win this, but we might eventually win it too. And then now they're playing football all over the place, consuming your professional product. You know, is that what the goal is?
Like basketball? When the 92 Dream Team came
right.
in, we
the
knew
world
that
said,
there yeah. was. You know, they won by an average margin of like 30 points a night.
Yeah.
But now it's actually competitive. In fact, so competitive, we lost one year.
Yep. The world said we'll catch up. We'll eventually catch up. And maybe Goodell is saying, I don't care if you catch up. I just want you playing it, practicing it, talking about it. And then, by the way, if you want to consume a larger product, this is the larger product.
We'll send you a team. We'll send you a game. I mean, will England be competitive because they get three a year now?
Very true. Very true. Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's a good point. Good point. All right. That's wake up call. It's good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. We're going to talk NFL coaches coming up and the 10 that are starting new jobs as we continue.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. You know what? Back to that flag football story that they're trying to get in the Olympic Games. That's what year is the Olympics going to be in Los Angeles?
2028.
All right, so it's 6 years from now.
Yeah.
I got some time to start putting that thing together.
Hey, you can let other countries know now. We can... You know, show you how to play.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. There's probably a bunch of old school people that are like, flag football in the NFL. That's what they're doing now. You might as well do flag football in the Olympics with all these rules. You might as well. Can't tackle anybody. Can't hit anybody. Can't decapitate anybody. Can't send anybody to the hospital. Can't paralyze anybody. I hear that a lot. So everybody's always like worried about every new rule. Look, if you were paying a guy $50 million a year, you'd do everything you possibly could to keep him healthy.
Yeah, you would.
I'm so sorry. I know it's not in the old school vein of like, you know, Terry Bradshaw being asked like what day it was. And he was like, Wednesday. And they were like, good enough. Get out there. Like, I get it. But I don't care what business you're in. I don't care what business you're in. You pay a guy a lot of your salary percentage, whatever you're budgeting for salary, you're gonna make sure he shows up to work as much as possible. Right? That's basically how that works. But you know what? The more I think about it, I don't know. I'm with you. I'm glad you did you predicated that with. I'm reserved the right to change
it
my
could
mind.
It
could be fascinating. I'll tell you, listen, I know that there were a lot of people who, you know, who see these Olympic sports and these new Olympic sports and they kind of roll their eyes. But remember, this is not just a swimming and track and field thing. I mean, there is all sorts of the Olympics are always trying to keep up with the times. They're always trying to keep up with whatever kids are playing, whatever kids are interested in. And, you know, it took a while, but when snowboarding got into the Olympics, yep. It became bigger than skiing. Like when I grew up, and I know you grew up, downhill skiing was probably, there was figure skating, which was the most important. Probably if you were to do a hierarchy of winter sports, figure skating was mm-hmm. number one. Probably female figure skating was number one. But right in that top area was men's downhill.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that was.
Come on, I remember the name Alberto Tomba.
Alberto Tomba, the Italian super skier who grew up, his father was like the Hugh Hefner of Italy. That's how he grew up in a sea of wealth, but in a Hugh Hefner kind of way. Without me elaborating, if you really want to know,
if you catch his drift,
if you catch my drift,
like but, that's I mean, basically that's, how else do we know that? I mean, that's what Hermann Mayer, the Austrian.
That's right. Yeah. You
know, I mean, there's no other reason why I remember these names except
Steve and Phil Mayer.
Yeah.
You know,
these guys were just, you know, legends of their sport.
Yeah. And then snowboarding, like Shaun White became.
Well, I remember when snowboarding first came out. I mean, first of all, it was, you know, only druggies use snowboard.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and then that one guy, one American guy, didn't really help out his case when he appeared on David Letterman.
Right. Yeah.
He's like, oh, they have really good bread here. It's like, oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he's right.
But that's the way the Olympics do it.
Americans dominated.
Yep.
Now, sure. Now we sit there and we think that we're going to dominate. It's like, oh, we didn't even get on the medal stand.
Yeah. So it's not crazy that they would look around and go, yeah, let's get some new things in here. What can we do? Now, again, the process of putting it in the Olympic Games is a little bit more complex. You kind of need consensus. Reasonably, you would say, all right, look, are we throwing an event that like six countries are going to participate in? Are we going to be able to get some, you know, a lot of consensus that we will actually have competitors? Okay, we'll see. But I, you know, some of the better events in the Olympics to me are not track and field or swimming oriented. I mean, those are the two big ones. Don't get me wrong. Like the Olympics are 2 weeks and track and, you know, swimming is one full week and track and field is the other full week. But have you ever watched archery at the Olympic Games? I think archery is amazing. I don't know how that they've got. When I think of archery, I think of Robin Hood, right? I just think of bow, arrow, sling it, throw it. They've got like sights and dials and I mean,
it's
nuts.
You look at that thing and you're like, where do you put the arrow?
I was like, this isn't my archery from like Cub Scouts where they threw me like a bow and string and an arrow.
Make your own.
They got these gloves on and they're lining up, you know, dialing it perfectly, feeling the wind.
Chin guards.
Right, yeah, chin guards. And then they've got it all set up. They've done the calculations and then they go, boom. And zip right to the thing. Is darts an Olympic sport?
I don't think it is.
You ever watch competitive darts?
Oh, yeah.
I'm addicted to it. Are you kidding me?
It's the dumbest thing to watch on TV.
Without question, but it's so fun.
When you get into it, you can't turn away.
It's the commentary, too. The commentaries, they are
phenomenal.
They blow it up. They do a great job.
But I don't know, man.
Pub darts?
That's why I like putting disclaimers on the dump sometimes when we have these because it's like I do reserve the right to remove, you know, to say I was wrong.
Yeah, we go back to it and say, look at that. Flag football in the Olympics. It's actually working.
It worked. It's awesome.
All right, like I promised, we'll get to these 10 NFL coaches and their new jobs. Who's got the biggest uphill challenge? We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio as we continue. All right, taking a look at, did you know there were 10 new head coaches that were in the NFL? I knew there were a lot, but if you had asked me before I was looking into this, I would have said, I don't know, 7, 6, 10. Nearly a third of the NFL head coaches are on a new team. Now, some of these guys have been head coaches before. Some of them have not. A lot of them have not, but a couple of have. So, like, I'll start with the ones that have been head coaches before. Lovie Smith is taking over in Houston. Josh McDaniels is taking over in Las Vegas. Todd Bowles, the new head coach at Tampa Bay. Dennis Allen is in New Orleans. A number of other coaches. Oh, and Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson, of course, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles, and he is the new head coach at Jacksonville. Matt Eberflus, the new Chicago Bears head coach. Brian Daboll is being a head coach for the first time, guiding the New York Giants. Kevin O'Connell is the new head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. Mike McDaniel is the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Nathaniel Hackett is the new head coach in Denver. So my question is, and this is depending on how you would define it, which of these coaches is on a has more expectation or more uphill battle, if you will, than any of the others that are starting? And it depends on how you view it, because you would assume that, like, Lovie Smith would be the one that's got a lot more to work with, like a lot of work to do. Davis Mills is the head coach. The cupboard is kind of bare. The team was pretty lousy. But at the same time, no one's thinking the Texans are going to the playoffs. They didn't just acquire a star quarterback. They're not trying to find that missing thing that prevented them from making a run in the postseason, or a guy that is supposed to lead them to a better postseason result than what they left. So if you are Lovie Smith, yeah, there's a lot in Houston that needs to be fixed. So, yeah, going to work every single day is going to be tough. But I don't think anybody's expecting you to turn this bad boy around overnight. But what if you're Josh McDaniels? The Raiders went to the playoffs. They lost on the road to Cincinnati, a team that went to the Super Bowl. McDaniels can't have a step backwards. McDaniels has to keep everything going the way it was and do better. Now, the Raiders were in transition, right? I get it, because John Gruden got fired and they were in an interim position. So it's not like he was taking over a guy that, like, had the team and then just he wasn't the right guy, right? Or you said Marty Schottenheimer with the Chargers that year. But he's also got expectations in Las Vegas are we're a playoff team. Even if we made the playoffs in the final game of the season, on the final play of the season, we are a playoff team. If you're Nathaniel Hackett, you have a double issue in Denver. All right? Because here's what he's dealing with. The Broncos haven't made the playoffs since Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl 50, in the winter of 2016. So Denver hasn't been to the postseason since. So he's not in a Josh McDaniels type situation where he's taking over a team where we're like, we made the playoffs and we better be doing it again. But his team also got him Russell Wilson and now have said, this is what's been missing this whole time. Yes, we have given the other guys, Vance Joseph, Vic Fangio, we've given those guys Peyton Lynch, Drew Locke, Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, Teddy Bridgewater, Brock Osweiler again. We've given the previous head coaches a number of quarterbacks that were nowhere capable of taking the team to the postseason. But now we've given you a guy that can get you to the postseason. We've got a quarterback. We've given you a guy that is capable of taking this team very quickly to a Super Bowl. So even though the West is very stacked, Nathaniel Hackett, we have now given you a good defense, and we've given you one of the better quarterbacks in the game. Now you have to go do something with this, and third place is not what we're talking about. Now you've got Todd Bowles. Here's another one.
Because we know how that all went down with Bruce Arians in Tampa, right? Moving up, getting out of coaching, big controversy. Oh, is there something going on with him and Tom Brady? Right? All of that. But that being said, Bowles, even though he's on the staff and has moved up in the job, so he's not coming in fresh, same thing. You got Tom Brady, that team made the playoffs, that team lost a home game to the Rams, even though the Rams won the Super Bowl, that was a team that got down very early, very quickly, had to battle back to try to make it a game, but now you've got Brady in the last few years of his career, you got to do something with that. We are a playoff team. We are a championship-level team. Go do something with that. This is probably the toughest expectation of any new coach in 2022. And it is because he was not very good when he was the head coach of the Jets. He went 24-40 with the Jets. But again, you're in the system. So again, you're not coming in fresh like, I'm going to learn everybody, you know, I'm going to work at everybody. No, he's got that for him. But nothing short of a Super Bowl, that's the expectation. I'm sorry. An NFC championship loss is not going to cut it. That's not what the fan base is talking about in Tampa. They're not talking about hope we have a good season. They know they'll have a good season. It's what you do with that good season that matters. And when you're coming off a Super Bowl a year ago and went into last season as the defending champions with a first-year Tom Brady coming into Tampa winning a Super Bowl almost, you know, second he gets there, Todd Bowles has got a very, very tough. I think him and Josh McDaniels have two of the tougher jobs. Dennis Allen is in a similar situation because with a healthy Jameis Winston, they're expected to be decent enough. I don't think they win the division against the Buccaneers, but they're supposed to be decent enough. But again, no Drew Brees anymore. This is Jameis Winston's team. Sean Payton's not there. He's a veteran defensive coordinator. He is a former head coach of the Raiders. He's got some talent. But I don't know if his expectation in New Orleans is anywhere near what Todd Bowles has to do in Tampa. And to some extent what Josh McDaniels has to do in Las Vegas. I look at Nathaniel Hackett, though, and I will tell you, it's an enviable position. If you are one of these coaches, like if you're Kevin O'Connell or you're Brian Daboll or you're Matt Eberflus and this is your first head coaching job, You take what you can get and you work within the system of the team you've got, right? You may not like Daniel Jones as your quarterback, but that's who you got because now you're a head coach. You're no longer a coordinator in Buffalo guiding Josh Allen. You're a head coach of the Giants, a team that needed a head coach because they weren't very good. And you're going to be the head coach of Daniel Jones, who's not Josh Allen. But if you're Nathaniel Hackett and you're learning how to be a head coach in the NFL, and no matter how much you prepare for it or how much you think when you look around and you think, I know how to do this, it's not until you get into the fire of the beast that you then know, all right, maybe I don't know. I really got to get better at whatever it is, organization, meetings, et cetera, putting this team in the best position to win with my coordinators, working with my coordinators, making sure they're as prepared and they have all the tools to prepare for the game plan. If you're Nathaniel Hackett and you're learning as a head coach, you are still expected with Russell Wilson to compete in a division that is so loaded, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's the best division in football, right? It's the best division in football. And you've got to be one of four teams that win the division or one of three teams that doesn't win the division in a conference where all four teams could make the playoffs. There's nobody to beat up in the AFC West, right? You have two teams that went to the playoffs. Another one should have gone to the playoffs. The Broncos now have gotten better at quarterback. They had a pretty good defense. So there is a lot of things on the plate for Nathaniel Hackett. But let's talk about some guys that may not have had tremendous pressure, but still have got their work cut out for them. Here's Mike McDaniel, right? Remember, assistant to Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. He's a young guy. He takes over a team. What does he have? Well, he just happens to have one of the most explosive playmakers in the NFL in Tyreek Hill. But he's also got a number of other good talented players. Jalen Waddle, for example. And it all centers around Tua Tagovailoa. So Mike McDaniel's job is to see if Tua Tagovailoa is the guy with weapons around him and playmakers with him. Can he get that offense to that level where the Dolphins become a playoff team? And remember, don't forget about the Dolphins last year under Brian Flores. The strangest NFL season I think I have ever seen of any team. Right? 7-game losing skid, 7-game win streak. And just missed out on the playoffs. Right? So Mike McDaniel, he's got some expectations there too. Are they as high as Nathaniel Hackett in Denver? No. Are they as high as the teams that went to the playoffs and now have new head coaches? No. But he's got to make Tua work or cut Tua and move on to somebody else. This is it for Tua Tagovailoa. If he can't make Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and Cedric Wilson and all those guys, if he can't make any of those guys work, then he's not the guy. He's not going to be the quarterback going forward. They're going to have to cut ties with him and find a guy who is. And Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, good luck making Minnesota. I'm sorry, Minnesota is the team that every year we do previews and every year we go, this is it. This is the team. They got this, you know, but what happens in the end? In the end, what happens with them? You know? Kirk Cousins and Kevin O'Connell are reuniting. That's good. Played, you know, came together in Washington. But Minnesota is too talented to be the kind of also-rans in the NFC, and yet they're always also-rans in the AFC. I mean, maybe that was the previous coaching administration. I don't know. But here's one guy that I am looking forward to seeing. Only because there's so much at stake in terms of a player's future. Doug Peterson taking over in Jacksonville. Now, while, again, he's really taking over for Urban Meyer, even though Meyer was fired midway through the season, they went with an interim coach. But he has the job now of making Trevor Lawrence an NFL superstar. He has the job with his coaching staff, quarterback coaches, offensive coordinators, etc., of taking Trevor Lawrence and making him the can't-miss NFL star everyone said he was going to be when he was at Clemson. That's what he has to do. They don't have a lot to work with there. They're not expected to do much in Jacksonville this year, but the growth of Trevor Lawrence is the most important thing. That's it. So those are 10 head coaches in the National Football League. I know Matt Eberflus has got Justin Fields and trying to make that work, but I think Eberflus is going to get a little bit of time to see if he can make that work. So there you go. Lovie Smith, Matt Eberflus, Doug Peterson, Brian Daboll, Nathaniel Hackett, Todd Bowles, Josh McDaniel, Dennis Allen, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel. Those are the head coaches.
Is it a successful season for Doug Peterson if he's able to get Trevor Lawrence to give us that one game?
Oh, yeah, right? You have the 1-4 touchdown, 385 yards.
The one game where
yards,
he looks like, you know, it's like, yes, you are a number one overall draft pick. You are the quarterback of the future. All the questions that we wanted.
Yeah,
that we answers didn't get. From last year that we haven't seen yet.
That we didn't get.
Well, if he gets us that one game, is this season a success?
If we get one of those, that'll be great. That will be great.
Listen, we're not expecting Doug Peterson to get this team into the playoffs.
No,
although you know probably easy. I'm not going to say easier in the AFC, but I don't think they should finish dead last in the AFC South.
But you know what?
When I think that's for the Texans.
Yeah, I think so too. When do we say, hey, Trevor, let's get moving here? Like,
yeah.
You know, like at what point in his second year do we say,
do we give him two games?
Because it can't be a lot. Like eventually you've had a full rookie season where you can make a lot of mistakes and learn as you grow. Fine. But at the same time, in your second year, we better start seeing you being able to, even if you got a bad team around you, even if you know you don't have the playmakers as other guys, you still have to look the part. You still have to be able to do some good with what you have. And I wonder. So, interesting. It's a lot of coaches, man. It's a lot of new names that are going to be behind on the sidelines in this year in the National Football League. On Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's a Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. You know what's interesting, Ron, about the list of the 10 coaches that I mentioned in that last segment? Not one of them is a guy that's coming in with only college experience. Like, not one of these coaches is like a Lincoln Riley or a Dabo Sweeney that's like, all right, I'm done with this. Moving on. Like, Lovie Smith was an NFL guy before he was a college guy. I know he coached at Illinois, right? That doesn't count. What I'm talking about is a guy that's a young kid on the staff of, like, Louisiana Tech, and then he moves up, and then next thing you know, he's at Florida State, and then he moves up and he becomes the head coach at, like, I don't know, some school, and then he becomes the head coach at Michigan State, and then he moves on to the NFL. I'm not talking about that. These are coordinators, former guys who are head coaches. These are all guys within the family of the National Football League. And yeah, it's, you know, I mean, that was one of the, when Urban Meyer was hired in Jacksonville, you could have said, right guy, moving up, et cetera. We've done that plenty of times with college guys who moved up. But I think the trend with GMs now is to go, no, there's a special type of person that is in this league, who gets this league, who understands the league, who understands the business of it, who understands the 24-hour nature of it. I need a guy in the office at 4 in the morning. College coaches don't get in at 4 in the morning. That's the kind of guy I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for. And I want to stay within the circle of this league. All 10 of these guys are all either former coordinators, former head coaches, but all have their roots firmly planted in the National Football League.